Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Living Mythology, I'm proud to bring you mages, sages, and seers with Frater Serpentis Satori. Greetings and welcome, Satori. How are you?
All right.
I'm glad to hear that. What is happening in your world?
I watched the Seeing Red thing on Disney the other day as part of preparation for this talk.
Okay.
And it's very good.
What is Seeing Red? I somehow missed that one.
It just came out on Disney Plus. It's about, it's sort of like an Asian version of the werewolf story.
Okay.
When she gets angry or emotional, her red panda comes out.
Uh-huh.
And that has been repressed in her family for generations.
Very interesting. And was the red panda a real creature, a part of her mind, a supernatural entity?
A supernatural thing.
Okay.
It's tied to the ancestor realm somehow.
I can see that.
In a way that's not explained well for kids, but.
Okay. I can see that too. I remember when I was much younger, when I was a kid, I had strong associations with the werewolf mythology. And as I grew older, I came to understand that better. So it had less of a hold on me. But yes, I can definitely see that.
Well, our real topic today is Hecate is my showrunner, which is our different demigod take on patronage.
Okay.
And we got a weird lesson in that in the past 24 hours because we were originally trying to reschedule.
Right.
And then that just didn't come through.
Right. The whole scheduling conflict evaporated, and it wasn't even a scheduling conflict. So it worked out very well for all concerned.
But that's who Hecate is. She's fate, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
And from my point of view, that I told you that was just mom doing her mom thing. That
uh-huh.
There's this, we had all this, like, we have to do this. And she's like, no, you don't. No.
And that's the best way for things to resolve themselves, where there isn't an issue at all there, and just the whole thing just evaporates and goes away.
Yeah. But that's also the problem. The power of the patron is the patron can just rewrite your reality. They can just decide, you think this is a problem. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Just do what you're doing. Everything's fine. Be patient. Give me a minute to recode this part of the story. Give me a minute to recode or rewrite this part of the story. You'll be fine. Play along till I fix it.
Well, when you're dealing with the invisible, yes, that reality does tend to rewrite itself in very interesting ways. And if you go with the programming that you're given at birth and throughout your formative years, it tends to steer you towards difficulty. It tends to steer you towards trouble. It tends to steer you towards conflicts, many of which are unnecessary if you change your perspective even slightly. So it's very difficult, however, to fight that programming because it is so constantly and continuously being reinforced by most of the things that would attract your attention in the world around you.
Because we're so drawn to outrage and drama.
Yes.
Rather than solutions and strategy.
It, it is very difficult not to buy into the narrative that's being told, because as you said, the narrative is compelling, and it you know, basically elicits outrage. Outrage is very common in our society, part of what's weaning me from watching a lot of this stuff is the fact that you can see very clearly that it's designed to evoke outrage. So whatever you're there to find outrageous or unacceptable, there's a perspective being broadcast that will give you that outrage, regardless of what position you're taking. The outrage is the same.
But that's fear and drama.
Mm-hmm.
The totalitarians and the Empire and Star Wars have always lived on fear and drama. Back to Caesar.
Very, very true. We're watching this play out where, you know, basically the show we're watching is the rise of dangerous autocracy, but the show that the dangerous autocracy is watching is we're the good guys, we're combating the rise of the really bad guys. And again, each side is telling a story, porting it by connecting the dots in a particular way. And
I mean, even Luke Skywalker was the villain for killing all those people on the Death Star.
Yes.
Even though the Death Star is the Death Star. In the extended universe, there's a whole thing about him being a villain for killing all those innocents on the Death Star.
And in Kevin Smith movies, he was that was pointed out very eloquently. In Clerks.
Yeah. That there were like a million people on the Death Star. And lots of them were conscripts. So what kind of hero is Luke Skywalker? What kind of hero is Harry Potter? Because they brought that on us.
That's part of the shadowy aspects of the hero tale. And as I'm currently fairly much organizing a lot of information on heroes in the heroic path, and the shadow side of it becomes clearer and clearer, more in focus for a longer period of time. So I'm trying to weave that into what I'm doing so that that gets said too, because otherwise it's just perpetuating the drama and the outrage.
Right.
And you want to be free of that.
We can't really be free of that and still be heroes. There's always the other side, and there's always the other side's propaganda.
But you can't
even
tell
Luke Skywalker. Even Luke Skywalker is a villain after Empire Strikes Back. Even Harry Potter is a villain when he has to hide at the end of the final book.
Arnold Schwarzenegger gave a brief talk in a video, an anti-war video, addressed to Russia and the Russians. And he, I believe, he used the hero tale, and he transcended the hero tale, and pretty much showed how they're reacting to, you know, poorly written and fictional stories. Have you seen
anyone who is listening to this who hasn't listened to what he had to say needs to go back and listen to that. That's very powerful and very good.
I put it on my Facebook page so that people can access it. And it was phenomenally powerful.
It's phenomenally powerful. It's Arnie being hero again. It's incredible.
And I like how he didn't demonize anybody. He was addressing people. He focused on what he admired in the people and their spirit and their accomplishments and their humanity. Zelensky's doing that a lot too, focusing on the humanity of people, not only his people, but also the people attacking him. again, this is very encouraging to me. It means we're evolving. Because still, many factions will demonize each side, and you know, will get outraged and want to respond with violence instead of with reason to see us through this crisis.
But that's always the authoritarian answer. That's the cycle of oppression and rebellion. Everyone who's Irish knows about that, because that's exactly what led to the troubles. Or as Princess Leia said, the more systems you squeeze in your hand, the more systems will slip through it.
Very true. Very, very Taoist and very, very true.
But that's exactly where guys like that go wrong. They forget the harder you squeeze, the worse the rebellion gets. Until the rebellion doesn't care anymore. They don't want to live in your world. They would rather die than live in your world. And that's exactly what happened in Ireland. That's exactly what happened in Star Wars before Skywalker.
Now, the hero as villain, part of the reason that I've resonated with the hero of Thebes, the son of Zeus, throughout my sojourn was because, you know, there too, you know, the hero and villain were in the eyes of the beholder. And although he was an exemplar in very many ways, he also encompassed the totality of the human experience, or you can narrow it down to the male experience if you wish, but it really encompasses the whole of the human experience. So there wasn't the this is a perfect being doing perfect things to bring about a perfect world and we screwed it up. It's very much this is an imperfect being taking action, some of them ill-advised, in a imperfect world, and generally contributing towards
working for the common good.
Yes. So that is something that I've always been cognizant of. And again, I never saw the reason for leaving that. I was raised Greek Orthodox and went to Greek parochial school. And for 8 years, we learned about the antiquity as well as, you know, the modern religion and modern history and so forth. But antiquity was where it was at, and that's what we mostly focused on. And I liked the mythology better because even though there was a great degree of what would be called amorality, still beings with power did things because they were beings with power. And it wasn't disguised as being good just because they did it or decided to do it. It was shown for what it was, and that many times you had to deal with in your universe unfairness, because the universe can be very unfair.
Because the universe doesn't really care, and it takes a long time for Zeus to care.
So,
as even the Iliad shows us about the Trojan War.
Mm-hmm. And those understandings.
Because Zeus is sort of like, there's a war, yeah, right? Yeah.
Exactly, and but those understandings are there, and they're at the surface, and those are life questions that everybody needs to be aware of, acknowledge, and come to terms with in some particular way if you're going to live in this world, and also as reminders that we really have not changed in time, or the human experience has not changed drastically in time. Whereas with some of the other understandings that I was getting through the through Christianity, there were contradictions in that I couldn't reconcile.
There are a lot of contradictions there that didn't work for me. And that's probably why I embraced Thelema when I was a teenager, because Thelema mm-hmm. at least understood there was a conflict between conflict and love.
Can you elaborate on that
in Thelema? Well, in Thelema, you understand love is the law, love under will, but Thelema is a religion of warriors that believe in love. So So we aren't trying to say, we all love you, but we're going to kill you because you're other. We believe there is no difference, therein lies hurt. So it's important to understand why we think you're different. And what that does mean. Because that's an uncomfortable conflict in our current world. Because everyone wants outrage, no one really wants to think about how we got here.
Or how we get out of where we currently are. Because, as you pointed out, it's not a world that many want to live in.
Right.
So according to Thelema, how do we resolve this this quandary?
We resolve this quandary by understanding that love is the most important thing, but being an individual is more important than love. Doing what you're here to do is the thing. Universal love is then the second thing. It's more important for you to be yourself and make the waves you're making and love your fellow man and just deal with you love your fellow man even though you're making waves. Because they're not going to like that you're making waves, but within Thelema, that's part of the, that's how it goes.
I'm trying to the best of my ability not to feed into many of the conflicts, I guess that would be the best thing to call them, especially those that involve different perspectives. And I've been focusing a lot more on the fact that for many things, I have no way of judging the veracity of the stories. We had yesterday one of our shows, and this is the director of one of the disclosure networks, the Disclosure Network in New York City. And he has several programs on our channel. And he had asked me what I thought of certain, I guess most people would call them conspiracy theories. So I had to honestly admit that I really am not qualified to comment on it because I have no way of judging the veracity. So with chemtrails, for example, the conspiracy theory, quote unquote, belief is that we're being slowly poisoned through the chemtrails. And they have a list of proofs that these are not what the scientists are saying that they are, but there's something dangerous and there's something unnatural, and they're part of a program to systematically kill or weaken the population. So I told them that I'm not a chemist, nor do I understand everything about the sky or airplane trails. I really don't. I've listened to arguments that sound plausible and were equally passionate from both sides or sometimes from multiple sides of some of these issues. But I really don't have the background to judge the veracity. So while I'll listen to the argument and it seems to be something dangerous, I'll look into it more and see what can be done to mitigate the danger if there actually is a danger there. Most of the things that that people are reacting to, I really don't know whether they're true or not. So I can't react to something if I don't know if it's true. If it's something that I'm very familiar with and I formed an opinion on, or if it's information being given from an authority that I've come to trust, then that is one thing. But for a lot of the things that I'm hearing, I have no way of knowing if they're actually correct or not.
And I think most Americans are that way after our past 6 years. you need to, again, find journalism with journalistic ethics and trusted news sources rather than Tucker Carlson. Someone says it doesn't make it true. That's part of how all of these problems always happen.
There's a whole undercurrent, like, for instance, occult knowledge when I was much younger was considered to be a dangerous thing. Now occult knowledge is readily available to anybody with a keyboard and, you know, a computer.
And YouTube.
And a screen. And the law of attraction, the beliefs that people have about, the law of attraction are true on an occult level. But there's a lot of stuff that you need to know about manifestation, before what you think your understanding gets put into context. But the belief out there that you, whatever you believe becomes reality. And again, it's true, but not in the way.
I'm in my podcast. In a minute. Okay. Sorry.
It's okay. So a lot of the information is, again, it's true, but I could see why this information was not released. Because of the havoc that it's wreaking. And the law of attraction, again, it has the power to liberate people from a lot of circumstances that they might find themselves in. But it's also serving to reinforce the beliefs. It's also strengthened propaganda by providing a belief system.
It's usually propaganda. Whether that is about your Skechers tennis shoes or about your Calvin Klein jeans, the law of attraction normally among the people who are not magicians is about you want it. In the world of magic, that rule works differently because that is about when you ask the right questions, you understand that you're attracting people who either are asking the same questions and don't have facts, which is what seems to be going on with the New Orleans people right now. We seem to be feeling like because we're elders, people are coming to us for answers, but we don't have facts to give them because those facts are not in front of us.
Going back to Hecate being the showrunner, since we've moved into this territory, one of the first thing that I published in this round of activity in the world was on the Philip K. Dick's concepts of reality, which included a lot of this, the fact that we're living in a simulation of some sort. And there's things like the Mandela effect and so forth. These are stories. That's become increasingly clear. And also, these are attempts to create reality. And this understanding has dawned on us to such an extent that it's mentioned on the news, that people are trying to create other realities. And it's being stated in that way, which is, again, very, very true, but it's a very deep occult understanding. Since Hecate is the showrunner in part of this game for you and at times for me, what show are we being run through right now?
That it all turns out okay. That, like our attempt at a reschedule right now, there are people who are important in the world of magic that think my show is on right now. And making them listen to this secondhand, I guess, matters.
Okay.
In the same way that, well, there's another thing that happens once a month where all of the magicians in America you don't want to be at the wrong end of the wand with are also in the same room, but she's a witch from Britain, but we all go and do her thing, and we all, like, side talk while she's talking. And again, it's a situation where the people that have so much mojo think this is how it is. And when you want to change that for us, that creates different ripples. Because whoever it is that's listening right now are the people that know who I really am and know what I've really done and know the truth about New Orleans and know the truth about the vampires and know the battle isn't over yet. Zelensky is carrying on for the battle. And this is that rescheduling was going to throw someone off in Ireland or someone off in Poland. Someone somewhere who's important wouldn't have been able to listen in live. And that would have changed our conversation because of their Heisenberg. Their Heisenberg would have been, they're not listening to me right now in real time. And that would have changed what you said and what I said, because whoever that is wouldn't be in the room. And on some level, Hecate knew that and didn't allow that to happen for whoever that person is. That person needs to understand we're live at this time. If they're staying up in Poland or they're in Ireland and they're just doing what they're doing in Ireland right now, we're here and we're live and you and I are having our live conversation. And somehow my mother, with all her power, didn't want to change that right now. And I, after 30 years of service to mother, if not more, understood that mother wanted this, and that's fine. Mother wants strange things all the time, and I'm usually fine with that because she's my patron. I'm usually fine with mother wanting, like, that weird Roman bottle at one liquor store. That weird steak at the other store, that's fine. That's part of what you deal with your relationship with your patron. Because your patron watches out for you all the time. Sometimes you come to this place. Sometimes you come to the place where the patron's like, no, you do it my way. And you just be a good soldier. You do it their way.
I can understand that, and again, time is not linear, things sometimes happen when they happen on a variety of levels. Like I'll give
time. Time is not linear, but causality still is.
So, for instance, I'm working on certain things. As you know, I've been working on them for a very long time, and then I had a precipitating event, and then all of a sudden everything I've been doing for the past few years, even though it seemed that I was spinning my wheels on some of them, clicked at the same time. And had I not spun my wheels or followed my inner inclination or my thelema, you know, my will that was moving me in this direction, all of that work would not have been done, and it would not have been ready for the moment when I needed it to actually be anchored in reality. So that's one example of like a greater thing. A lesser thing, which hasn't played out yet, is I was thinking of a play that I was in where I was Samson. And I don't know why I thought of this play. I haven't thought of this play in quite a while. So I looked up some of the people who I connected with on Facebook just to see how they were doing in case there was something there I needed to know. Couldn't really find anything. Then I was in my kitchen a few days ago, And you know how things get stuck in your head, songs or movie dialogue, and you wonder why is
well,
this going
to Well, that's actually something I want to talk about. That is something I explained that back in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
Is actually because even though we demigods are no longer in Greek plays, when you get a song stuck in your head, it's probably the chorus. It's
okay.
Probably the chorus wanting you to think about what the song really says. And so when that song is Coldplay and Coldplay is telling you the cemeteries of London, you're dealing with the cemeteries of London. When you are dealing with a situation like Russia and Ukraine, and the Russian and Ukrainians have decided that Smells Like Teen Spirit is the theme song, the chorus brings it up because in a Greek play, the chorus brings it up because the main character has to think about what the chorus is trying to tell them. Normally in a Greek tragedy, they ignore it anyway, but if you're a Greek hero, you need to understand the chorus is trying to tell me Smells Like Teen Spirit or Bittersweet Symphony or Tomorrow Never Knows or whatever the chorus is trying to tell us. Because if we listen to what the song says, we're actually being told what to do.
Definitely, but sometimes, again, it's not being told what to do. It's just to be aware that something's coming up. So in the kitchen, I was getting bits of dialogue that were based on a song. The song was Why Delilah, My Delilah. But it wasn't the song itself. It was
the Delilah song. Yeah,
it was from Hercules Returns, the comedy dialogue when they went to get Samson from Delilah. And so anyway, that kept getting stuck in my head, and I commented on it to my wife. And then later the same day, out of the blue, I got a Facebook personal message from the woman who played Delilah in the play where I was Samson. And she was feeling very nostalgic and asked me if I still had copies of the script. So I personally don't know what I did with my script, but I asked Athena, and Athena still had the script. So again, that's still the process of unfolding. But I received notices of it, you know, for days before that didn't really make sense out of context. But now as they come into focus, I got some sort of, be alert for this. This isn't something you put on a shelf, you know, that something's unfolding as this transpires.
Right, and that's what synchronicity is to the Jungians, that you are led to that place where you are given, where you understand that's what the other person needs. Demigods, it's more complicated because normally we are being given breadcrumbs. Normally the gods are trying to tell us, you need to go this way. We understand you can go to the golden city or the silver city. But I'm sorry, Aragorn, you need to go talk to the dead people.
And sometimes you'll hear exactly what you need to hear by talking to the dead people, even though that's something that you might not normally want to do.
Well, that's a separate, longer conversation, especially after seeing Red and Black Panther. All the weird conversations about what the ancestors really can help us with.
Yeah,
we were trying to talk about how being a player character is different than being a non-player character.
Okay.
And on some level, when you're a hero, it's your job to inspire.
Right.
Unlike being a non-player character who are just there, when you're a player character, it's your job to fight the battle. It's your job to make everybody else about being everybody else.
Well, in terms of conditioning that we mentioned before, a non-player character would be somebody who's playing through the life script, and they're largely operating unconsciously, whereas a player character would be somebody who's conscious or trying to become conscious and trying to break through the programming and act from places other than the life script that they've been conditioned to act through.
I mean, that's what the first Matrix is about. The first Matrix is about recovering your agency. And sort of the fourth is too, but I need to re-see that one. But player characters go on quests and get artifacts and are heroes. Non-player characters watch them do it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess when you're a player character, when you're a hero, you know your job is to shake things up more than the non-player characters. And then you end up in the story, and then you have to think about where your story goes. And then there's a showrunner and an arc.
And then there are mandated encounters, which regardless of where you place them in the campaign and regardless what the characters do, which often varies from the campaign that you've established, they at least have the mandated encounters to move the story along.
Right. And as player characters in a story, you have episodes and a showrunner who had a bigger understanding of where the series finale really is, what you're really doing. Even if what you're really doing doesn't make any sense to you in the very beginning of the story, the showrunner knows where you're going, and so the showrunner knows magic items and spells and things that help you get to where you're going to need to be at the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And people that aren't sure they're heroes usually have trouble with that beginning step. Because when you're transferring from being an NPC to being a PC, and there's a lot of stuff about this all of a sudden. In the past couple of years, we've gotten a lot of stuff about going from being a non-player character to being empowered to be a player character. And I'm not sure what that means, but I know there's a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Westworld is the very best example, because the main character in Westworld really does go from being a very minor NPC to being the main character.
Right.
And now we have Free Guy on Disney Plus, and there's also a story about a character who gets robbed every day at the bank, becoming the hero. With Captain America's shield and a lightsaber. I'm sorry, a friend wanted me to say that.
Okay.
But there's that. There's, as you become more free from the Matrix and become more of a hero, there is power with responsibility and responsibility with power. And that's probably why people don't want to do it. Because the people with responsibility don't seem like they're very happy.
Well, it's the only way to get out of the cycle of victim and victimizer, or oppression and rebellion?
Oppression and rebellion. There are a bunch of books about that.
Right.
Usually people from the Star Wars universe don't know those books, but yeah.
But if you take responsibility and you take responsibility, that's the first step toward liberation. And initially it might be liberation from what you consider to be oppressing you, but then you realize that it's liberation from your own programming that comes of it, and you're no longer victims to the stories that you've been led to believe are true. And again, I can see people not wanting that, because without these stories, what's your reality? It's a tremendous responsibility.
Well, I mean, that's the whole point of Westworld. That's the point of First Hours of Westworld. She's so stuck in her story, she doesn't want to leave her story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that's great literature, because that raises good questions. Do you agree with them or not? That raises good questions. That season of Westworld, like the first season of Hero, is still incredible. Whatever they did later, not everyone needs to go for the ride for. But it is a question about programming, but that was the whole Matrix thing about the red pill and the blue pill.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want to do this?
Right. And that is part of the liberation too. I'm in my 60s now, and I freed myself from many of my stories over the course of a lifetime. Where it led me in the end, not that this is the end, but I'm past the middle, is a return to what I was very familiar with, not because there aren't other ways, but because I'm most familiar and comfortable with that. And since I can do it any way I want, I could either create something totally new, which I've done several times in my life, or I could stick with something, you know, that's comfortable, like an old pair of slippers. And for me, I rose from the myths, so I returned from the myths. And again, knowing that there are many other ways to articulate and many other ways to interpret what's going on. But this was a way that, again, for me, made me the happiest and made me the most at home. That's what I'm doing for the rest of my time here. But I'm still free from being stuck in that, because it isn't the be-all, end-all of how the universe is connected and how meaning is. It's something I've chosen out of not a limited number of choices, an unlimited number of choices, actually.
Well, we'll get to that soon. We need to talk about the multiverse and then shortly.
Okay.
And how the multiverse is personal, because the multiverse is everyone I'll never be. Because Billy Corgan's right about that. Sometimes the other guy is everyone I'll never be. But that's a complicated conversation for a beginner.
We'll have it another day then. We don't have a lot of time in this conversation. We have like 15 more minutes. But that is definitely a conversation worth having. One of the things that helped me in that particular conversation with myself mostly was that throughout life, we accept and we reject. So in reviewing my life, I found that there were certain things about my upbringing that I rejected out of hand, and there's others that I accepted unquestioningly. So in the choosing of what I accept and what I reject, is there any agency? So that became something I meditated on and thought about for a very long time and had a lot of interesting experiences while doing so. So then comes admitting that the things I chose, I chose. So I take responsibility for what I chose. And the things that I didn't choose, if they caused a reaction. Maybe there's shadow there that I need to look at, you know, because shadow too is part of me. So I have to take responsibility for the shadow aspects as well. And the shadow, it's very easy to let the shadow become the villain when the shadow is anything but. Again,
and that's also a topic for a longer conversation.
Yeah, not today's conversation. But again, there's choice and there's agency, regardless of whether you think there's choice and there's agency at the time. And because time is not linear, parts of you are making decisions in times that aren't necessarily the ones where your consciousness is moving down a timeline.
Yeah. Parts of you are... choosing to do the things that are easy or impulsive or and that's what causes all of our problems right now in America. The people choosing to do what's easy because it's instinctual or because they don't know better. That doesn't make it right. That makes it easy. And that's what we're going to figure out over the next couple years.
So because I'm at a point now where I'm doing various things, from your perspective, from Hecate's perspective, what is the most important thing to be focusing on right now, aside from it'll all be okay? And that, by the way, is a message.
The thing only you can do. Do what only you can do.
Right. Okay.
You have your rate. Your rate is a combination of your background, your skills, and your birthright. Do that. Do that now and show others that we don't have to live in fear. The world isn't over. We're all going to be back here in 10 years when Putin's gone and Trump's gone and we all have to be here in 10 years. And so shouldn't let anyone who sells fear is a liar anyway. And they always go down. You just don't always get to see them go down, but they always go down. Death always to tyrants, like they said when they killed Caesar on the Ides of March. Those guys never really win. They just think they do. And they win for a week or a month or a year, but they don't really win and don't really make the rest of us surrender because they just think they do because that's part of oppression. But there's a cycle of oppression and rebellion that you can keep doing that, but it just makes things worse for your guys. You can keep killing civilians, but then you're creating terrorists in 10 years. So did you really win? Is that winning? Did Rome really win against Ireland versus when Caesar did it? Did England really win versus Ireland in 1974? Is that winning? If that's winning, what's losing? And that's where the other guy should think. Because Putin is doing some serious stuff and he hasn't even nuked the cathedrals in Kiev yet. There are a bunch of cultural places in Kiev that if he bombs them, they are irreplaceable. They're irreplaceable things. They are wonders of the 21st century world. If he does that, he knows he does that. And he's already a war criminal in the eyes of the United States Senate and the European Union. So if he crosses those other two lines, what does he think he wins? And I can't answer that question because I am totally at the point with him where I think he's crazy. And people who are in the world of magic don't really like to wade into the world of crazy. Because we're not really supposed to cross that river.
It's ironic because to the uninitiated, if you're studying these topics, you have.
Right. People in the world of magic try to sit on the other side of crazy, the other side of UFOs, to not let people think we're crazy. Because we just don't want to be involved in that. But if Putin starts nuking pretty things in Kyiv, he's already a war criminal. If he crosses that other line, I have no idea what happens. But we already are having the British press and the French press talk about a coup. So this may be over sooner than everyone believes.
That is an opinion that has been shared by many folks who have been sharing their opinions. So I hope that this is over soon and in a way that causes the least amount of harm.
Wars of aggression are wars of aggression. This has happened since the beginning of time. This is just a really stupid war of aggression. A friend of mine was joking to me about this is like the war TV show by the people who made Veep on HBO. That this is like the dumbest war ever. And she's a pretty smart little Irish girl. Her saying that to me is like, but you see it too. Like, yeah, girl, I see it too. But you said it to me. But yeah, I don't really understand sending an army with 20 bullets each and 2 days of gas each as an invasion. I don't really think Emperor Palpatine would be down with that. I think Thrawn would not be down with that. I think that would not work so well. But hopefully this will all be over next time we do our podcast. Pray.
And onwards, another step ahead in this ongoing conversations lasted for years. Are you still unreachable? People should reach you through the podcast?
Yeah, people need to reach you through me because you and I haven't started structure enough yet.
Okay.
And when we move through our next couple stages over the next couple months, we'll figure things out.
Okay, very well. I will talk to you after the podcast. I'll give you a quick call if you're free. And thank you so much.
I'm free. Hit me in a minute.
Okay. Are there any last thoughts you'd like to leave with people before we wrap up for today?
If you were listening to learn about patronage, the easiest way to do that is still to light a light candle and ask for a dream. The way we did that in the 80s is still the best way. I know TikTok and Instagram are telling you they're to do things differently, but just ask the God or Goddess within to show you, and they will. That's the best. That's 40 years ago. Did it that way. And if you're ready, you'll get your dream. It's always a dream.
And the dream may be enigmatic, but you'll definitely get a communication.
Well, I mean, if it's the Morrigan, you have a dream about ravens. If it's Athena, you have a dream about owls, whatever. It's usually really clear if you do it that way.
So thank you again very much for extending and expanding our knowledge and giving us practical ways of moving forward along this path, plus lots of stuff to meditate upon. So again, I enjoy our conversation, Satori, and I look forward to our next one.
Okay, I'll speak to you in a minute.
Thank you, and thanks to all who tuned in, whether you tuned in live and clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you waited patiently in our queue while we had our discussion, or whether you're going to contact us at some later point or watch the show at some later point on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Good night, everybody.